It was so close but so far for Reading at the John Smith Stadium as Huddersfield come away with a late goal to ensure a 1-0 victory that puts a real dent in our automatic promotion hopes. But results elsewhere go our way, so the playoff fire burns strong. We'll look back on a tasty encounter in Yorkshire and preview an even bigger game this weekend as Reading go to second place Brighton, where if it hasn't already been D-Day for our automatic chances, it'll almost certainly come this weekend. As well as that, we've got news bites, including a look at the latest on Royal Elm Park and who you have been voting for player of the season so far. Plus, we've got lots to come in the mailbag, including would Hal Robson Kanu thrive in this Reading side? And lots, lots more. So stay tuned for all of that in the 119th episode of the Tyler Sten podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. As always, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersten.com. Before I introduce my co-host and get on with the show, a very big thank you to everyone who has joined into our Patreon crowdfunding campaign. Lots of people have stepped up and put their hand in their pocket. They seem to appreciate what we do and thought, you know what, these guys deserve a little bit of compensation for that and I want to see it get bigger and better, so I'm going to do the right thing. Join that elite circle. And Dave Stevenson, Alex Mason and Susan Eggleton have all done so this week. So thank you to you and everyone who continues to support us. Right. We've named an unchanged side this week. So alongside me is Assistant Editor Mark Mayo. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm very much the Tyler Blackett of this podcast, aren't I? Kind of came in not too far ago and now settled into the first team and back again.
Yeah, you're a regular part of the furniture. Now you've displaced those also-rans like Westy Handbags and yes, Johnny Williams.
It's the fresh blood, isn't it?
Yeah, they needed a good kick, you know, to motivate them for when they come back on the show. They prove there's a new kid in town. But anyway, thank you very much for joining us. Without further ado, let's get into that recap. It was Huddersfield 1, Reading 0. We'll dig into it now.
View from the Tarhurst End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
Mark, before this game, few people were expecting Reading to get a positive result. I think the good straw poll is always the Tarhurst End Prediction League, and four out of the five of us were all predicting defeats by at least one goal. Most of us predicting two or three goals. In the end, 1-0 defeat for Reading. Okay, it comes in slightly heartbreaking circumstances, but is your glass half empty or half full after this result?
Should probably say half full, purely because, as we were saying, it was kind of a game going into with a lot of intrepidation, a sort of fear that we were going to come out with a kind of 3-0, 4-0 defeat. As we've gone into these Huddersfield games quite a few times, and we haven't got a great record at the John Smith Stadium, so that was a bit of a fear going into it. But as it comes out, we put in a good performance, and obviously performances aren't what you want at this stage of the season, but given the state of Huddersfield, the form they're in, and the fact that we pretty much matched them for most of the game is a decent enough kind of takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a team that had won their last five games, including beating Brighton 3-1 and getting a win over Leeds. I think they'd only lost twice at home all season. I think one of those was a fluky home defeat to Wigan. So this is a really powerful team. This is one of those fixtures where you go, even if you're aiming for the top two, you probably look at this fixture and go, we'll be very lucky to come away with anything here. And the good thing is Reading, you know, 82 minutes, they're very much in this contest. They have chances. They defend really well. And for certainly, it's still a patchwork defence. Really, when you look at it, you're still missing the likes of Paul McShane, your record signing, Thiago Alori. Rhys Oxford missed this game with injury as well. So for the defence to put in such a strong display on a difficult night, the weather wasn't great, I think they deserve a lot of credit. And we'll get to the Apstam's comments later, but he certainly seems to agree with that. But if you were being in that glass half empty camp, you might look at this and say Reading had chances and they didn't take them.
Yeah, it is a problem obviously when you look back on these games, and it's not this sort of 2012 sort of victories where we had one chance and we took it. This is kind of the opposite. We had quite a few chances and we didn't take it. That chance for Liam Moore right at the end in the 92nd minute was a really nice chance, but it just fell to the wrong person. And these kind of things do happen in these games. You've got to have those singular moments go right, like their goal, the Huddersfield goal, went as perfectly as it could have gone, considering they kind of messed up the chance as well.
Yeah, it was kind of a miss hit in the way, in the build-up, wasn't there?
Yeah, when it fell to Billings, and then it went in to the single gap that there wasn't someone on the line as well. So these are the sort of things that go against you. You've just got to hope the next time they go for you, and obviously against Brighton, that would be a good time for that.
Yeah, I think in our heart of hearts, I think you can look at a lot of games Reading have been involved in and come out on the winning side. Very similar scenarios where it's been give and take both sides. Sheffield Wednesday at home, I think, is a really good example of that, where Sheffield Wednesday are on top for large periods. They get that amazing chance and they miss a complete sitter. And before you know it, Reading have gone and won the game. So these things, they don't always balance out over the season. But on this occasion, you know, I think we were almost due one of those. And
And also, like, when Huddersfield came to the Medeski earlier in the season, one of their players decided to get sent off.
Mr. Van La Parra.
And that did the game for us, pretty much. And obviously this time we kind of made the mistake of giving away the penalty. So these kind of things, they do tend to come around.
Yeah, Mr. La Parra missing the penalty in slightly bizarre circumstances. Izzy Brown won it. A little bit of a soft penalty. There definitely was contact from Tyler Blackett. Yeah. I felt very bit sorry for Blackett because he stumbled just before Brown got to him, and I think that just sort of threw him off balance. I don't think he was intending to even put a foot in at that stage, but he just found himself in the wrong place and brought him down. So Brown wins the penalty. He steps up to take it, but he's been dealing with an illness throughout the game. Wagner signals from the bench that he doesn't want Brown taking it. La Parra picks up the ball and gets into a bit of an argument over who's taking this. Wagner said after the game he actually wanted Lowe to take it. In the end, it's Mr. La Parra who probably won't want to play Reading again in a hurry because, as mentioned, he follows up his red card at the Mad Stad with a missed pen. Well, not a missed pen, it's a saved penalty. Another fantastic stop from Al Habsi.
Yeah, it was. And it's one of those that he has to commit himself. And Al Habsi does commit himself. That's kind of the reason that he saved the one against Fulham, because he dived to the side that went in. He almost saved the one against Cardiff. It just slipped under him, which is quite unfortunate. But you could point a finger at him, perhaps. But he more than redeems himself for any questions of that. With the kind of, it's a good height for him, but he's got to get quite far across his goal in the short space of time.
What did you make of Stam's team selection? There was a lot of talk about substitutes and selection for the games against Barnsley and Brentford. This time he went for quite a counter-attacking, pacey forward line. You had Roy Behrens back in there, Lewis Graben in the centre, and Gareth McCleary as well with a midfield. Danny Williams back in that midfield. Liam Kelly and Jordan Much in there as well. Do you think he got the balance right? I was thinking maybe we should have stuck to that five at the back.
If I was John Swift, I'd have felt a little bit harshly done by to have Much in there, but that's kind of a like-for-like swap and at the end of the day. I think the key thing was that he went with Graben up front, shows that he wanted the pace to counter-attack as opposed to Kermigan, who is, you know, we've said how well he's done this season, but he's kind of becoming and turning into that striker that comes off the bench and has an impact now as opposed to starting games. I wouldn't say I would have gone with three at the back purely because McShane probably wasn't fit for the 90 minutes.
Do you think we'll actually see a starting lineup of Graben and Kermigan in the same team? Because that was, you know, the dream when Graben signed. You looked at their combination at Bournemouth. But so far, he's resisted that temptation. Even when they were on the pitch at the same time against Barnsley, it was Graben in the midfield and Kermigan up front.
It was. I don't think we'll see him starting together because he doesn't seem to play two up front. When it is these kind of 3-5-2s, the one who's up front with, if it's Kermigan and McCleary floats around a lot more, and Graben is more of a penalty box striker from what I can tell. So I don't think he plays authentic partnerships up front.
No, and I think that is a little bit disappointing because I would really like to see what they're doing, but you can't blame him for sticking with a system that's done so well. What did you make of Graben? Because, you know, he's had a couple of chances in the last couple of games to impress in the starting lineup. It's just not quite coming off for him yet.
He reminds me of when Kermigan came in. Like, it was this stage last season. He came in January, didn't he?
Also from Bournemouth.
Exactly. And he came in after 6 months of not really playing, not scoring for sure. And you watch those strikers come in and you just think that there's a lack of clinical instinct that puts them over the line and gets the ball in the back of the net. Quite often making good runs, quite often getting on the end of good crosses, but not with the finishing touch. And that's what he's lacking at the moment.
Yeah, Yapstam suggesting that Graben should have had a penalty, or certainly could have had a penalty for an instant in that first half. You've seen the replays of it now. For me, personally, I think he's looking for a bit of contact from the keeper, Danny Ward. Do you think he had a firm case for a spot kick?
If they give it, it's soft. It wasn't quite as clear-cut as the Huddersfield penalty, for example. And I would also point out the ball had probably gone, which probably hastened his fall.
Yeah.
Do you not agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think if it was the other way around, I think we'd be feeling a little bit hard done by. Yeah. They've certainly been given, and I think Stam's got a case. And he was talking about the fine margins, and that is the fine margins, really, of games like that, isn't it? You know, if Reading get the rub of the green, get that penalty, you know, they're in a wonderful position and probably go on to win the game because they did a pretty good job at containing Huddersfield. But, you know, you can tell that Graben isn't fully fit because well, not fully fit, but into that match rhythm, because he has that chance in the second half as well, and it just inches the other side of the post. And you know that if Grabban's been playing for 10, 15 games and scoring a few goals, that's ending in the back of the net.
Yeah, and that's the risk we've got to take. Do you start with a striker like Kermigan, who is not going to offer you as much sort of mobility and might not suit the style of play, especially away from home so much, but we know he's in a little bit of form? Or do you go with Grabban, who is potentially this kind of promotion-winning striker, or could turn out to be a bit of a Vidra if things don't pick up?
We talked about substitutes last week, and you went on to write an article up on thetarlesen.com, which you can go and check out, one that's caused plenty of debate, certainly on Twitter. This time around, Stan makes three substitutes in fairly short order in the space of about 10 minutes or so, all of them on the pitch by, I think, the end of the 71st minute. First one of those is Adey Popper, who, unfortunately, so far in his Reading career, just hasn't made his mark. I mean, this time, 8 touches in about half an hour on the pitch. And if you compare that, Gareth McCleary played in the same position, the man he replaced, 31 touches. So even if he had half the time, he was making double the touches of Popper. Is this just a case of it's going to take time for Popper to adjust, or is there anything, you know, you're concerned about looking at him?
I wouldn't say I was concerned too much, because I don't think he's going to feature that heavily. I mean, in terms of his Reading career, it kind of builds into one of those kind of like Raquel's kind of had it, although he got a few goals last season, like a Thomas Sivka sort of signing.
It was just the name I was thinking of.
And it is, if they come in and they do well, then it's a bonus and that's great. But if they come in and it's pretty average and mediocre, then you haven't really lost out too much. And you have a feeling that playing for Steaua Bucharest, you can probably send him back to a similar club without too much fuss.
I'd imagine. I mean, I hope he does well, but it's difficult because we had contact from a West Ham fan the other day saying, what's happening with Reece Oxford? You know, why is Reece Oxford not playing? And you look at that Reading starting lineup, and there's little motivation for Stan to really gamble, is there? Mm. I know he's given Grabban a few starts and much a few starts, but you know, there's no real reason to replace McCleary. There's no real reason, you know, to replace one of your defenders, a Tyler Blackett.
Yeah, and if he's going to take out, or if he's going to put in Popper, he's going to have to take out Beerens, which he has done. And when he's taken out Beerens, it's kind of more to go to a 5 at the back, or he's going to put in like a like for a 4-3-3. And he hasn't done that. Even earlier in the season, he hasn't done that. So Beerens isn't playing bad enough for me to think, let's throw in what is effectively a total unknown. And it is quite an important position on the pitch, because it's pretty much one of the only sort of creative places that we have down the wings.
We talked a little bit about, you know, Huddersfield's role in the game. Obviously, they come out with 3 points to pick up their 6th win in a row. But what do you make of them now? You've had a couple of chances to see them, and obviously been on TV and whatnot. They are the form team in the division. But do you think there's much, if Reading were to get them in the playoffs, would you be worried about facing them again?
The playoffs is such a different environment, and I think that if we probably have to go away to them second, wouldn't we? I'd probably say that
they're
the least likely team we're going to get, because they're going to finish third realistically, and that would require us to finish sixth, which I don't think is quite as possible as us finishing fourth or fifth. But if we were to get them, going away their second would be very difficult. But at the end of the day, this is quite an inexperienced side in terms of winning promotion. We've seen Brighton sides quite often, and like Forest and all these kind of sides that have great momentum going into the playoffs and then kind of stutter, like Cardiff did against us back in 2011 or whenever it was.
Yeah. I think there are a few players in that Reading squad that have got experience of winning promotion. You know, you like see your Grabbins and your Kermigans, and a handful of players who were still around the sort of Reading squad. Well, actually, in saying that, I don't think there's anyone left from the last championship winning side. I suppose Jordan Obita was in and around the club, but apart from that, actually, I think they've all gone.
Yeah, everyone who's sort of long-serving now has came in the Premier League,
didn't they? Well, there you go. Now I'm feeling old. but there is still a sprinkling of experience around there. I would very much fancy Reading if it was to be over two legs. I haven't seen anything in that Huddersfield team where I go, Reading can't compete with them. People, and a few Huddersfield fans are having a pop saying, oh, you were lucky to get a win at the Whiskey, and oh, we well deserved that win last night. But looking over the balance of two games, there's very little in the teams. And I think if you look at Leeds as well, I think Leeds, Reading and Huddersfield, to me, are all much of a muchness. They've got good players. I don't think they've got brilliant players. They've all got good team spirits. They've all got very good, pragmatic young coaches.
Yeah.
But I worry about the other team, whether that's a Sheffield Wednesday, whether it's a Norwich, because those teams, with the money they've spent, have just got that little extra spice. And also, that little extra player.
If you're the team that finishes sixth, I know they don't tend to go up, but they can be the team that has just crept yes. in at the last minute, and that can be very dangerous over two legs, especially. I'd say about Leeds and Reading in particular, Huddersfield, when they beat Brighton, Leeds and Reading at home, they were all late goals and all fine margins, effectively. So that's a good sign for them, but it's not total in a sense.
It's the goal differences that stand out, isn't it? You look at the Championship yeah. table and you look at what the goal differences are of these teams, and it's very close to the level mark, which shows they're not blowing teams away.
Yeah.
And obviously, in playoff games are tight in general.
Well,
so
I think all of them have the capability of playing out of their skin and putting a team to bed if they really want to, but all of them are perfectly capable of turning up and being a bit frightened and a bit mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, you look, I mean, Huddersfield have only scored 43 goals in 32 games. Reading have got 47 in 33. Leeds 45 in 33. Not a massive amount of goals. Reading's defence a bit more porous, with conceding 42, Huddersfield 35, Leeds 34. But they're just doing the best of what they've got and getting taking advantage of those fine margins and getting the results. It's a laughable tweet coming in from somebody saying, oh, are you still worried Reading are in a false position? 33 games in, no such thing. No,
I don't think you can beat false in after 33 games. After 10 games, yes. After 15 games, maybe. But by now, I don't think it's really a debate.
No. Any other positives or negatives to take away from the game on Tuesday?
I just think it's that we seem to have gotten rid of this spell of occasionally being absolutely hammered in games. That Fulham game and the Newcastle game as well, like forever.
Brentford, yeah.
And Brentford as well. Whatever performances you can tell me, obviously we conceded 4-4-5 in those games. So it's good to know that we're not necessarily falling into that trap, although obviously Saturday might prove different.
Yeah, and that will be a big one. Yap's reaction to the game at Huddersfield, he says, in these games, the difference between the teams is not very big. You know it's going to be tight. They've got a quality team as well with quality players. So when you get a chance, you need to score one and then try to defend well and not give anything away. And we didn't give a lot away. In the first half, they had a penalty and Ali made a great save, and they had a couple of shots at Ali in situations around the box. But in the second half, their only real chance was one which they scored. So compliments to the boys in what they have done and in how we played. But of course, you want to have results, and sometimes it's better to have a result and not play well, which I think is fine. And I just wanted to add this tweet in as well, ahead of the mailbag from Stacey, who was at the ground. He said, the Huddersfield fans were very class. Their drama actually influenced their singing and atmosphere. Very German-like. I think that is one thing I like seeing in Huddersfield, is that passion from their fans. And I think it might have been Will from the Tullis then saying that he was, up there for the Cup quarter-final. Cup fifth round, because he was due to see Reading that weekend and didn't want to change his train tickets. And he said that there's that excitement, there's that buzz that's just not quite around Reading at the moment. Even though we're in a great position, there's not that massive buzz going around.
Yeah, but it's Huddersfield's sort of first time in that sense, isn't it? That if you think back to Reading's first time, if you think back to the other clubs like Blackpool when they came up, like obviously all different sizes, but Huddersfield do have that kind of their sense that this is sort of their time, which isn't, it's not going to guarantee them success, but you get that sense. And also at John Smith Stadium, they have that little section of fans next to the away fans, which is very deliberately set up to have all the flags and banners and everything. And that's where the chants start. And obviously that's quite a German sort of thing that they've installed there.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't begrudge them their moment in the sun. I've got to be 100% honest. They're not my favourite team to go up. Out of the lot, I do like, if it's not going to be Reading, I like to see the biggest clubs and the biggest stadiums taking part in the Premier League. But, you know, everyone deserves it. And if they earn themselves promotion, credit to them. And I hope they prove everybody wrong and do what many clubs have done and buck the odds and do well in the Premier League. But we'll see how it goes. I do think we're heading for a run in at some point before the end of the season, whether it's at Wembley or in a playoff. But that remains to be seen. But as mentioned, you know, a great, you know, Reading didn't play Saturday, and the results elsewhere, Mark, really sort of went our way. You look at how the table's shaken up after all this. Reading's still in fourth on 60 points with 13 games to go. Leeds are on 58 points with 33 games played. They couldn't beat Ipswich at the weekend. Sheffield Wednesday, having an absolute mare, losing at home to Brentford 2-1. They're on 58 points, 2 points behind us as well, playing the same amount of games. Then there's a big gap. Norwich played the same number of games as Reading. They're 9 points back of us. Fulham are the team to watch. They have got two games in hand on Reading and are 11 points behind. But, you know, win those two and suddenly it's five. And then you've got the rest. Barnsley, I think, are probably out of it, 11 points behind us. And then it's Preston, and Derby have just absolutely have done their traditional springtime collapse.
Yeah, it's almost come a bit early, hasn't it? I'm a bit sort of when I saw them on back in 12th the other day, I was a bit surprised. I didn't realise they'd gone that far off, but you know, they lost 4-3 home to Cardiff a few weeks ago, and then they haven't really picked up.
Yeah, they failed to beat Burton at home, 0-0 draw.
Yeah, exactly.
Norwich getting beat at Burton was a great result as well.
Absolutely. I think the team that kind of surprises me in their sort of downturn is Sheffield Wednesday, because they were here last season. You'd think that they'd have that, and they've still got some very good players, and they signed Jordan Rhodes in January, didn't they?
Yeah.
So I thought they'd kick on a little bit more than they have.
I think they've got a few injuries they're dealing with, and I think Sheffield Wednesday... I think Reading will get into this way, and I remember this from past Reading seasons where we've been in the playoffs, but we've sort of known the automatic promotion races. You almost kind of slow down a bit and just start to grind stuff out rather than go like a freight train.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of clubs sort of start targeting points over periods of games instead of having that kind of next game mentality, because you don't actually have to win the next game if you're already 5 points inside the playoffs.
Well, I'll ask this question. I mean, we'll talk about it more when we look ahead to the Brighton game, but... You know, looking up now from Reading, Huddersfield are 4 points ahead of us with a game in hand. Then you've got Brighton, 8 points ahead of us with a game in hand. Newcastle, 9 clear with a game in hand. Is there any lingering chance of Reading winning? I mean, everything's mathematically possible, but if you had a fiver, would you put it on Reading to go up?
To finish in the top two. I said like 3-4 weeks ago on this podcast, I don't think we're going to get in top two, and that hasn't changed. I still think that compared to past years, these top two are better than usually found, and the teams below us are worse. So I don't think it'll work.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the points total that, I mean, if Brighton were to only win, say they've got, 14 games left. If they were to win 6 games from here to now to the end of the season, that would put them on 84 points. That would mean Reading would need to get, with the goal difference being so inferior, 25 points from their 13 games. So even that is, what, 8-9 wins from 13 games?
And those are tough games as well, aren't
they? Yeah. And that is with Brighton having a massive slump. And assuming that Huddersfield also slumped. So I think you are really looking against it. Reading would literally, I think, at this stage, need to win 10. I think they need to win 10 of their last 13 games.
Yeah, it's possible, like we said before, but... We're not on that kind of form already, which doesn't help, and we're not watching the teams above us collapse, which is probably the main thing.
Yeah, but anyway, it all looks good for the playoffs at least. So anyway, we'll get on to more of that in the mailbag and in any other business. But for the meantime, we do have a few bits of news to get to. That's coming up in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so not an awful lot to get to in News Bites this week, but there are a couple of stories worth mentioning. The first surrounds Royal Elm Park, that massive great development that's going to replace the car park at Medeski Stadium and hopefully make us some money. The latest comes from Reading Chief Executive Nigel Howe. He has said that the planning permission the full updated plans could go back to the council in the next few months. Once it gets through then you're really motoring with the plans going ahead. Mark, it's difficult to say. We're not intimately involved in what's going on, but are you any way concerned with these delays and how the project's been going?
I kind of think the fact that it's going back to the planners means that the delays are probably coming to an end. Anything else is going to kind of depend on the takeover. I still believe that, I mean, just sort of speculating that if it were to happen and were the Ties to still own the land, then the council might get a little bit sort of iffy about that and might fancy they're going to get a bit more take than they already have. Because remember, this is land that they gave away for free to Medeski. So
yeah, I think they sold it for £1 or
exactly,
something.
Exactly,
like
yeah. So they might want a little bit of something out of it, having a bit of speculation. But other than that, it's the fact that there's nothing going on in the takeover probably means that the worries for the council will probably reduce a little bit.
Yeah. I just want them to do... to be the, you know, get on with it or not do it. I think the more delays, more uncertainty is not a good thing. I just want to get it sort of kicked off or kicked into the long grass, whichever one of the two. In terms of the takeover, absolutely nothing to report. We talked in last week's show about Chris Samuelson popping in to see the Barnsley game. No word on why he was there, no real reports. It's just stayed very quiet on that front. So, we'll just have to watch this space. And I just wanted to bring up one thing related to a poll we've been running on the Tarlhurst End website this week, looking for your player of the season vote so far. Now, the whole reason we did this is because quite often the player that wins the player of the season vote isn't always the player that's been the most consistent over 12 months. It often goes to players that have had a real strong end. You think of Ali El-Hamzi last season. I think if you'd polled fans in January, he'd be nowhere near the top 10. But he had such a barnstorming last 3-4 months that he won it. Jordan Ibiza was the same in his breakthrough year. So I wanted to see, based on the first two thirds of the season, how you'd vote. Mark, who would you guess? I know you've got it in front of you and have probably read it, but if you were guessing before we did this, who would have been in your top three?
Well, the ones I actually voted for were McCleary, El-Hamzi, and then Swift.
Yeah, you would have two of the top three right at the moment. Currently leading is Liam Moore. Liam Moore leads the voting at the moment. Gareth McCleary is second, and Ali El-Hamzi rounds out the top three.
Yeah, Liam Moore's victory so far is kind of a testament against recency bias, because actually recently he's not been on his best form, but at the start when he came in and when he wasn't playing, you really noticed it. So I think that's what swung it.
What I think is really nice this season is there's no obvious candidate. There's no one player. I remember when Adam Federici won it. There was no real competition.
Yeah, finding like second was hard that year.
Even last year, it was really difficult to see past El-Hamzi.
Who was second and third last year? Was it?
Was Gunter in there?
Like, he could have been. I wouldn't even be able to tell you. That's the problem.
Oh, I'm going to look this up. But yeah, generally, it's just, it is nice because there are so many contenders. I mean, you mentioned John Swift, who's not even in that top five. Liam Kelly, if he has a good end to the season. I think it said a huge amount. I didn't mention it in the recap, but it's a massive vote of confidence for Liam Kelly that he gets into that starting lineup last night at Huddersfield ahead of John Swift.
Oh, yeah,
who would have thought that, again, going into November?
Yeah, I'm just hoping that when our results come out for the official player of the season at this stage, we don't accidentally mix it up with our worst player ever poll and accidentally announce Imerse Faye as the player of the season so far.
Yes, and that would not be ideal.
I think
ideal.
Someone might pick us up on that if we confuse the two.
Okay, so the last year's top three were Ali El-Hamzi, Paul McShane and Oliver Norwood.
Yeah, see, the fact that McShane got in there when it was a team that was kind of leaking goals quite comfortably and Norwood got in there without having any, you know, kind of memorable moments of winning us a game shows quite a lot, I think.
Yeah, so a nice situation to be in this time around. Anyway, that wraps up the News Bites section. We'll get on to your questions and feedback. That's coming up in the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
As always, massive thank you to everyone who has chipped into the mailbag this week. All the usual places at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, and over at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend for all of your thoughts in for the show. Right, we kick it off with Jeff Hallett, who has sent us in an email. He says, "Hi guys, following last week's debate about the fan base, I'm a displaced fan living around Nottingham, have followed Reading FC for 25 years. Currently go to the local games up here, Huddersfield last night for example, but find myself less and less enticed to go to home games, the style of football being the main issue. I believe this is why we're averaging 16,000 in a playoff season, where we'd usually get in a good 18 to 20k for our league position. It does feel like the glory days of supporters were the Pardew/Copple or Brian McDermott, the first time around, days. The atmosphere and the football were much more enjoyable. Has the club peaked in terms of its fan base?" A very, very good question, Jeff.
Well, I think, firstly, the point on the fact that it was the first time round we had that buzz is exactly what we were talking about with Huddersfield, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're feeling, and they've got they're selling out their crowd, and obviously we're in the same position and we're not because it's not the first time. Has the club peaked in terms of fan base? So I've always worked on the theory that obviously, because I have been going to games with my dad, who is a displaced Bolton fan, who in like the late 90s wanted to watch some football and had a son who then wanted to watch some football, and that kind of living in Reading made it very simple.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Does this mean your dad was actually rooting against us in the 95 playoff final?
Quite possibly.
Unbelievable.
We keep that quiet, though.
I was going to say, I might have to kick you out in a minute. Sorry, carry on.
But, yeah, effectively, what we've always thought is that my age group is kind of that, the majority of Reading fans. I go to an away game, I'm pretty much in the core age bracket of that kind of, at the moment, it's like 18 to 25 range. And, like, my dad's always, "Oh, your mates are at this game," and he always point out my schoolmates and always have a chat. Like, even at the Bristol away game this year, bumped into one of my old uni classmates. So it's a sign that there's quite a lot of people in their mid-25s or so going to games. The point that I'm making is that in about 15, 20 years' time, these guys are going to bring their kids. And then you have the sort of fan base goes up by 15, 20% overnight, in effect. And that's why I don't think it's peaked, because that long-term sort of point of view that the club has taken over the last 15 years will pay dividends in the next 10 or so years.
Yeah, a lot more families have been encouraged to come since we've moved to the Maneski Stadium. And if you think that, you know, it only opened 19 years ago, those people that were 5, 6, 7 and first coming along with their mum and dad at that age are now at the, you know, the ages themselves where they're having kids. And like you say, in a few years' time, hopefully they'll bring them down to the Madstad. Those generations of people that didn't want to go down to a rusty Elm Park and follow a third or fourth tier side have hopefully been converted. So we can hope that the atmosphere in the football, I do agree, and we've said this on the show before, it's not been great. The games haven't been so exciting that you can't wait to turn up next week. The Brentford game, funnily enough, was actually a good example of that, but unfortunately it fell on Valentine's Day on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, no, about 12,000 people in the ground.
Yeah, we've had rotten timing. Like times we've been on telly, we've played badly against QPR and Ipswich. So yeah, I've got to admit, if I'm a neutral, I'm trying to sell a neutral fan, I'm going to find it a hard sell, because you don't see a lot of goals. It's often a lot of passing it around the back, and Reading haven't developed their style to the point where they're a really good side to watch.
Yeah, the pace is quite slow, and if you're going to have a bit of a slow pace, you need those moments of flair that kind of turn the game into something exciting, other than just sort of moments of failing that turn it back to the goalkeeper to knock it round some more. And we're not at that stage.
Well, they don't have. If you look at some of the classic Reading sides of the past, you know, football changes, but you've had, you know, in the 80s and 90s, had Michael Jilks bursting away.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Jilks, actually. And Kebbe a little bit later.
Yeah, you had the trickery of Glenn Little or Bobby Convey, and then you had Jimmy Kebbe doing it. This time around, I mean, Gareth McCleary, I think he's had a really, well, no thinking about it, he's had a fantastic season, but he's not had a lot of moments of where you really get behind him, you know, you're roaring him down the touchline or roaring him through on goal. There's just not been a lot of get on your feet sort of moments. And I think that does have a bit of a knock-on effect, because you can sometimes go away feeling a bit unsatisfied.
And especially because the teams we're playing aren't playing great football either. So it's not bringing out the best of us. We're quite often having to scrap in games where we're trying to play it round and it doesn't quite match up, does it?
Yeah, I think the further you get away from the Pardew and Coppell eras, I think the more fresh it will feel. I think for a lot of fans, yeah, they have been there and seen it before, but give it another 5-10 years and those memories will quickly fade. And suddenly they'll be able to get excited again. Hopefully we'll be a Premier League side, so we won't have to be worrying about this.
Yeah, well, that'll make a big difference.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's a really interesting point. I mean, let us know out there. I mean, how do you feel? Do you think it has peaked? Do you think, you know, the fan base will continue to grow? Do you think it will shrink? Let us know. All the usual places I mentioned about 5 minutes ago. Anyway, thanks for that, Jeff. We move on to Louis Burton, who tried to get this in just in time for the last show, but just missed the deadline. He asks, do you feel how Robson Kanu would have thrived in this Yapstam team? Despite all the criticism that I've certainly given as well, I felt he did play well when things were going well. I'll put my hard hat on now. Thanks for the question, Louis. Mark, I'm going to just go straight out and say I think he would do really well in this Stam side. I think he'd be better than Roy Bearens. Come at me, bro.
Yes, no.
No?
No, I can't see how he would be any better in this. Well, this team isn't doing that much better than the Adkins team was in 2012-13, and he just that's totally the wrong year, by the way.
He took over in late
13-14, so the championship year when we finished seventh, and Robson Kanu was off the back of doing incredibly well in the Premier League and then just didn't do anything. I mean, he did all right for periods last year, but we have seen him kind of fail in teams that are decent before, and I don't think he'd offer the kind of technique. Or he might offer a little bit of physicality and pace, a bit of balance, but I don't think he'd offer substantially more than what we saw of him the season he left.
If you offer me Hal Robson-Kanu at a decent wage and a decent motivation level, I would certainly have him over Roy Bearens. We've been over this argument more times than I can cope, but Hal Robson-Kanu needed to leave the club at the time he did. I don't think, I mean, maybe Stan would have rejuvenated him, but I don't know. I think, but in a complete isolation, if you just offered me Hal Robson-Kanu as a player in this Stam team, take away all the circumstances, I think he would do really well. I think this would suit his style of football a bit more, and I think he would enjoy playing in this sort of a team. But it's not happened. He's gone. So who knows? Alex Everson, if we draw or even lose at Brighton by one, The momentum is not lost. Top two chances dead, but vital we get five wins. Tend to agree.
Yeah, pretty much. As we said about the Huddersfield game, the Brighton game falls into the same sort of bracket. As long as you play decent enough and you don't get trashed, then you're still on track because we'll still be in the playoffs.
Well, let's go down the unfortunate road then. What if they do get trashed? Is there a scenario you can see where Reading get absolutely thumped at Brighton and the wheels come off? Is that something you could actually see happening?
Well, yeah, if we lose 5-0, then the problem is that we'll have Wolves at home, which are a decent enough team at the moment, Wolves. They're not in terrible form, and that would have to be a must-win then, because say we lose that 1-0 or we get a boring 0-0 draw, you're then playing Newcastle at home, and Newcastle are the best away team in the league, so they can put three past you, and then suddenly you've lost three games in a row.
And we are in a run of one win in four at the moment. You know, those draws with Ipswich and Barnsley, you know, we nicked a win against Brentford and then lost at Huddersfield. So if we don't beat Brighton, suddenly it's one win in five. Don't win Wolves, you know, one win in six, and I suppose it could snowball.
I think the danger is that you put more emphasis on these games against Wolves and Prestons. And although I don't think they're great teams, they are in that mode of now having not much pressure on them. And against a good team, they can raise their game and get something.
Yeah, you don't want the nerves around the stadium, do you? You don't want people getting antsy.
Yeah, when, as I say, these teams who aren't fighting for their lives, they may turn up and just not be bothered, but they can also turn up and fancy a good win to end their season well.
Yeah, Mark Sugar asked, does Danny Williams stay or go this summer? Wrote an article on this the other day. My opinion is out there. You can read it on thetylersend.com. I say he goes. Mark, how do you feel?
He goes if we stay in the Championship. I can't imagine a scenario where we're going to pay him anything like as much. And the fact we've had a decent enough season will mean that someone will come in for him, I imagine.
Well, is that a contract?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I can't. If we go up, there's a good chance we'll give him a new deal.
Would you, though? Would you commit to giving him another 2-3 years? Because, I mean, the chances are you might end up going straight back down. Would you? Yeah. I just think it's time to move on.
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me if he did go, but if we kept him on the same wage for another year in the Premier League and said that if we go down, you can either leave or half your wage is gone, then that might be a scenario. But yeah, I don't think we do that as Bobland.
He's not a terrible player. I just think you just need to freshen it up. And I just don't think he's ever really hit massive heights here. He has the odd good game, but a lot of times he's just meh. I'd like to see what someone else can do.
Yeah.
But again, if he takes a 50% wage cut from a reported 30 grand a week, then suddenly it's a lot easier to stomach. But yeah, a lot is going to depend on where we are and the ownership situation. So it's a whole other set of problems to deal with. And we finish the mailbag this week with Matt Roberts. He says, from the next five games, Brighton, Wolves, Newcastle, Preston and Sheffield Wednesday, how many points should we be looking at for the playoffs? And we will answer that one in any other business when we profile that trip to Brighton.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, with that tease having kept you hooked through the sting, we will answer that question in the context of looking ahead to this game against Brighton. We'll answer that question right at the end, but focusing on Saturday's game.
Even more of a tease.
Indeed, you've got to keep you listening. Brighton, they're second in the Championship, as mentioned earlier, 8 points ahead of us with a game in hand. Their last five games, though, Mark, not been brilliant. They've only won two out of five. Just having that little bit of a wobble. They've been slightly fortunate other teams have been wobbling as well. But do you get the feeling that this is a team that have got their stumbles out of the way, or do you think that they are still a little bit vulnerable?
They're still vulnerable. Yeah, definitely. It kind of reminds me of when we went to Hull at the back end of last year, I think it was. It probably wasn't that far towards the end, but we got, I think we got an early lead, and even against a team that was obviously went up in the end, you kind of felt that there was definitely something there for us. And obviously we lost that game, but I think we're a bit better this year, or quite a lot better as it turns out. So I think definitely a chance for us to get something, and an early goal would be absolutely magic in this game.
Yeah, they've got a lot of threats all over the pitch. You look at it, you know, you've got Glenn Murray, Sam Baldock, Knockhart, who for me is the best player in the league this season. Chuba Akpom on loan. You've got Tom Ahmed on the bench as well, and you've got some, you know, some good solid Championship players with, you know, our old chum Steve Sidwell. You've got Dale Stevens, Lewis Dunk, lots of really good players. You do just get the feeling that this is their year. I think that if they are going to make it, then with that team, that this should be their year.
Well, I think, yeah, they'll finish top two, which is why I think it'll be a much easier progress for them. If they ended up finishing third and being in the playoffs, I would fancy playing them if I was in the playoffs than they were as well.
Huge downer.
Exactly. Yeah, you fancy them in that point for getting knocked out, but I don't think they'll fall that far. Still means we can beat them. They'll finish top two, definitely, because there's enough time left in the season. They only need about, we were saying earlier, like 6-7 wins maybe for the next 13-14 games. So I think there's room for us to be optimistic for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird feeling, because even if Reading were to go and win that game, you would almost think it would suddenly get those automatic promotion questions raised again, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Almost like dangling the carrot in front of you again, when kind of in the back of your head you always kind of want to be like, right, let's just fully focus on the playoffs. But no, let's just win 13 games and win the league. As I mentioned, you know, a strong team. Reading were actually the last team to win at the Amex when we won 2-1 up there in the League Cup. Great little goal from Johnny Swift, as you may remember. Nice little curling effort.
Yeah,
they've only lost once at home this season, though. And it's going to be a real, real tough one. The bookmakers have got Brighton 13-20, so best part of 2-1 on. The draw is 5-2. Reading are 5-1 to win this game. Now that, for me,
I would take that.
That is worth a cheeky little quid or two. Hashtag gamble aware. Hashtag pie gambling aware.
Yeah, not with Sam Betts, but.
Did you know that that's the Sutton Reserve goalkeeper was actually on Reading's books as a youngster?
I didn't, but now I do.
Yes, AD Williams was talking about it earlier on Radio Berkshire.
Just
talking about the goalkeeper.
Oh, okay.
Saying that he was a YTS at Reading, and he played with them for 2 years in the old youth training scheme. But back then he was a striker.
Of course.
Which might surprise you, given that physique from the roly-poly gooly.
I imagine he wasn't 23 stone back when he was a teen.
I don't think he would have got signed. But who knows? I mean, don't know what the academy was like in there. We're taking all sorts of players like that. Yeah. Brendan Rodgers chap. But anyway, so yeah, the bookmakers very much making Reading the outsiders for this one. Prediction League, I'm the only one here out of the Prediction League fivesome. As it stands at the moment, we all predicted doom at Huddersfield except for Charles Watts. That's left the standings. No one got the score right, though. Johnny still leads the way on 29. Then Dave is out on his own in second in 27 points. Then myself and Charles on 26. And Westy is now into the 20s on 20. Mark, before we look at that points total and answer that long-awaited question, how do you see this one going?
I think it'll be 0-0. Precisely because of one fact that I've managed to pluck that will go on the website before the game, but for anyone who's made it this
far. Oh, a tease of your own.
Maybe anyone who made it this far into the podcast deserves to hear it anyway. But after playing a midweek game this season, Reading have only lost the weekend game once.
Oh, okay. Who was that against?
And that was after the Plymouth League Cup game. We lost away to Wolves on the weekend. And since then, we haven't lost a weekend game having played 4 days before that. We've lost 7 games in midweeks this season and only 4 on the weekend.
I wish I had that optimism. I think it's going to be a 1-0 defeat, unfortunately. I think it's going to be a very similar kind of game to the one we saw on Tuesday night. I think Reading are going to do a good job at keeping Brighton under wraps, but I just think they'll get that moment from someone like a Knockhart or a Glenn Murray, because he's Glenn Murray, and I think they'll just slip behind. But as long as... I agree with, you know, the tweet we had him earlier from Alex. I think as long as they don't get trashed, I don't think their heads should drop.
I don't envisage it being goals, goals, goals. I don't think that it's going to be like a 4-4-3-3 type game. I don't think either side is going to commit that much.
No, as much as I've predicted Reading to lose 1-0, funnily enough, I think I can make a good argument and pretty much the same argument for all three results. I can easily see a scenario where Reading go and nick this 1-0 or 2-1, and I can easily see it just ending 0-0, 1-1. I just think my hunch is that Brighton win this. So anyway, I'll get predictions from the rest of the crew. But let's get to that question then. Those 5 games, Brighton, Wolves, Newcastle, Preston and Sheffield Wednesday. Matt asked, how many points should we be looking at for the playoffs? We talked last week sort of saying Reading needs to be targeting 5-6 wins from their last 13 games. This would leave us with 8 after this point. What is the minimum we need from this? Is there even a minimum? Could we lose all 5?
You could lose all 5. It'd be very annoying if we did. I would say 6 or 7 points I would take.
Where are you targeting the wins there?
I mean, if we...
Preston and Wolves?
Beat Wolves and or Preston and or Newcastle. I think Preston and Newcastle is definitely there to be won, I think.
Dwight Gale now out for the next 6 games.
Yeah, and a big home crowd might suit us. But 1 win and 3 draws or 2 wins and 3 losses and or draw in there, I think, is the something that you could stomach and still get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think if you take 7 points from those 3 games, you might as well start booking those playoff dates off, because I think that would leave Reading again needing 10 points from 8 games, something that they should, you know, based on all form, rhyme and reason, do. Anything can happen in football. But yeah, if you get 6-7 points, I think the only danger is, you know, I think even if Reading pick up 4 points from that group of games, I think it still keeps you on track. Because again, 4 points, 64 points, again, looking at 15, you know, 14, 13, maybe even 12 to get into the playoffs from that stage. And
I think it's, obviously it's hard to know when that's the fifth game, but the fifth game in that is the most important, isn't it? Sheffield Wednesday away. If you beat them, then you push yourself, obviously we don't know how it'll be then, but we're so much further clear of the chasing pack, which is the danger to us. And if we lose, and say, if we lose in Sheffield Wednesday seventh then, or sixth, then we get dragged in, and that's probably the most important game there.
Yeah. Do you see the top six changing in terms of who's where? Do you think that the team, four teams of the playoffs, are the four teams that are going to finish there?
I think three of them will be.
You think someone's going
to slip
out?
As we said before, one team is always liable to slip out. I would think Fulham or Norwich are one of the two teams that would jump in place of them. I don't think it's going to change much in terms of places. I don't think we're going to find Huddersfield in sixth or us or Leeds in, you know, third or sixth. I think it's going to be us and Leeds in one, and then Huddersfield and probably Sheffield Wednesday in the other.
Who do you want in the semi-final if we get there then?
Leeds would be really dangerous, but I think they'd be probably one of the better teams to face.
I agree.
Because they can stack it if they get a little wobbly.
As mentioned, I don't think Leeds have got the supreme quality in that starting 11 to really hurt you and really run away with the game. I know they beat us 2-0 at Elland Road.
It was 1-0 in effect, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I would take Leeds, especially if Reading were to get that, you know, finish fourth and Leeds fifth, and so ensure that they had the home leg second. I think the one thing I don't think you wouldn't want is to go to Elland Road in the second leg and have that crowd roaring him on.
That'd be dangerous. I mean, that's, again, that reminds me of the Cardiff semi-final a few years ago when we went there having drawn 0-0 and won 3-0. Those type of games do happen in the playoffs, and quite often the teams that are away second do well.
Okay. Well, it remains to be seen. As I said, we'll have plenty of preview material up for that game up on the Tyler's End over the next few days. So please tune in for that. And again, a big thanks to everyone who's joined in the Patreon campaign. It's patreon.com/thetyler's End. That's patreon.com/thetyler's End. And to everybody who has chipped into the show this week, very much appreciated. Mark, thanks for taking the time to join us. Have a good week. Hopefully we'll be back in a week's time talking about a win.
Let's hope so.
Indeed. And on that note, we'll end as always with a hearty rendition of Come On You Arse.
Social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.